Good. Okay, I'm Bryant. This is what I'm talking about. So first off, why site assessments for urban trees? Okay, and there's a couple reasons. Number one reason is that urban trees have pretty significant value. So this was the cover from a report that was done in Tampa assessing the value of Tampa's urban forest. And they found that there's about 8 million trees in Tampa and worth a structural value close to $2 billion. Okay. Another interesting thing they found with this report was that the vast majority of urban trees in Tampa are really small. And we know that big trees are going to give us much more value. Okay, so that'll tie into site index. And actually, it was a shocking number, like 86% of the trees are less than 6 inches diameter. Okay, reason number one. Reason number two is that we have a wide diversity in planting site qualities. Okay, so we have high quality sites over here that are getting irrigated with big areas for rooting space, and then we have little tiny cutouts here. This happens to be in downtown Chicago, which management might not be there. Okay, so we have high value potentially in urban trees, and we have site quality issues. Okay, and site quality issues are really important when we start to consider that certain trees are more tolerant to stresses. Okay, we have trees with relatively weak tolerance, and if we were to plop those in our low quality sites, those trees would struggle to live to longevity, and it would put a lot of money to maintaining them. So we don't want to put them there. We could put those trees with a higher hardiness. So something like a honey locust, we could put that in our low quality site, and that would do a little bit better. We could put those tough trees in our high quality site, but that would be rather inefficient, okay? Because I think that we should be using those high quality sites for introductions of new species. Okay, so we can work towards urban forest diversity by putting species where we don't know maybe something about hardiness, or we put our trees that have relatively weak hardiness. Okay, so site index will allow us to work towards urban forest diversity. Reason number two. Reason number three is a lot of urban sites are pretty terrible. Okay, we've done some mismanagement, I'd say, to these sites in terms of compacting them and altering their chemical composition, and a site index will allow us to see how effective our management actions are towards fixing them. Okay, so three reasons. One, not listed up here, is urban trees can be quite valuable, and we can maximize diversity, and also we can assess how effective our management is if we have a nice site index. Okay, so we can just go to NRCS and plop up our maps, right? Nope. So if we look at NRCS, you know, try to use that data source, which is a tremendously valuable data source for most areas other than urban. In urban, this is the area around the convention center. It's mapped all as urban land. And we have no horizons in that data set, so we have no interpretations. Okay, so to state it right now, we don't have any, we can't use that data set. Okay, which maybe someday. We might be able to use some existing soil test guides. So USDA NRCS and their accompanying companions on soil quality. We might be able to use that, but many of those indicators were really developed for agricultural systems, and certainly not for trees. Okay, so they may or may not be appropriate. In forestry, we have a really elegant system of quantifying different sites called the site index, which tells us how big trees are going to be at a certain time in their lifespan based on some site and soil factors. And that would be really awesome. We could maybe apply it to urban, but those are developed for trees in a forest, not for uneven, open-grown trees. So right now, that's probably not appropriate either. Okay? So knowing all that, we sat down about 7 years ago and said, okay, can we develop a site index for urban trees? Okay? And what we want in the site index are these things. So we'd like it to be comprehensive, include physical, chemical, and biological properties. It should tell us about ecosystem processes. If we manage something, we should be able to see the site index respond to it. Okay? Gives us a biological relevant number like the site index. Okay? That's what we're working towards, something that means something, okay, in terms of biology. It should be components of existing databases, so we can use what we have. And we think field-based and inexpensive are also really key and critical components of any indicators we develop. Okay, so that's what we decided. All right, so with that in mind, we started our first research project 7 years ago, and this was published in this journal right here called an Urban Soil Quality Index, and we started with a shotgun approach. We measured everything we could think of. Okay, we measured 85 properties, and we assessed them on close to 100 sites in Chicago, and we did a whole bunch of modeling, and we wanted to see, okay, what's the most important properties for predicting tree growth and health, okay? And what we found is that we were able to develop a model that could explain almost half of the variation, which is pretty decent, and we developed a thing we called the Urban Soil Quality Index, and what isn't shown up here is that this index is quite complicated and also includes a lot of laboratory analysis. But we did identify the most important properties for us, and that being texture, bulk density, pH, electrical conductivity, and some sort of assessment of labile carbon. Okay? So we're pretty happy with that, but we also recognized some pretty significant deficiencies in the model in that it told us nothing about management, it wasn't relevant, it wasn't field-based, and it was very expensive. Okay? So step two, that's what I'm going to talk the rest of the presentation about, our next model. Okay? So we developed what's called a rapid urban site index, and we have a couple of objectives towards that. The first thing was the development of this thing. So how this worked is I basically proposed a model and sent it to a whole bunch of collaborators, about 30 of them throughout the United States and a couple international folks, to get feedback on them. Okay? We took the information from the Urban Soil Quality Index, and then we made modifications towards it. So some of the soil properties you can see were identified in the Urban Soil Quality Index, and we also included other factors that we think are important for controlling urban trees, climate and urban. Okay? And we scored everything. Okay? So we assigned better electrical conductivity of 3, our worst electrical conductivity of 0. So we developed scoring functions for each one of these 15 parameters across 5 different factors. Okay? And I don't have time to walk through all this, but I'll just give you a snapshot of it. So there's our scoring functions table. Don't look too hard at that. Okay? I'm just going to walk through an example of each one of those 5 properties. Okay? So for instance, exposure. This is one of our urban factors. So more radiation would be a really good thing for trees. So the number of sides of this tree exposed, so 1, 2, 3, 4, would get scored a 2. Okay? Versus if all sides were covered by buildings or whatever shaded, then that would get scored a lot lower. Okay? An example of an urban factor. Okay? And this was to get at how urbanized the site might be. Okay? So we looked at the number of lanes and whether or not it had parking on the street. Okay? So lots more lanes and no parking, those are going to correlate with really busy roads and probably a lot more urban effect. Okay, so for instance, this is a site in Chicago. This is a 4-lane road, no parking, so that would get scored a 1. Okay, and then the soil parameters. So we had physical, chemical, and biological properties. Texture is one of them. So we did field texture in the field, and we lumped it into these different categories. Our loams being our best, and no soil. This would be like a structural soil, okay, or something that structural soil is essentially what this is. Okay. Electrical conductivity, this was a screening for salts. Okay, salts are really important in many of our colder climates, also our cities on coastal areas. Okay, so we use this as a screening, and we said that our lowest value, or our zeros, are going to be above 1,000 microsiemens per centimeter. And this is a little bit lower than the salinity, what we say 4,000 is our salty soils, but when you measure this, you measure it any time of the year. Okay, so we think that we're using that as a starting point. And then an example of biological property, wet aggregate stability, and we did the slake test in the field. So we put a bunch of aggregates on a screen, and we looked if they fell apart, and then we shake them a little bit, and then we see how much more fell apart. Okay, so that's just a flavor of some of the properties. All right, now we have this model. We wanted to test it. Okay, so we tested it in 8 different cities, and we looked at 3+ different species. So all the cities had red maple, and then we chose the second most common species in that city as also a study species. And then we had at least 20 replicates of each species in each city, Stevens Point being the exception to that because I have a lot of students there, and we have actually close to 400 plots in Stevens Point that I've been sending them out in. Okay? All right. So correlating our model then to qualitative and quantitative assessments of trees. Okay, so we have 3 qualitative, 3 condition, and this is a common assessment that arborists and urban foresters would do. They do a drive-by survey and say, okay, that's my best tree, that's a 3, versus that thing's dead, that's a 0. A more complicated model, which assesses crown, stem, and root factors differently, and then we compute that into an index. This model was published in our initial paper, and we use this qualitative assessment as well, too. And then we use Jerry Bond's urban tree health metric approach, where he assesses these 5 different things on the tree qualitatively. We scored that 0 to 5, and we also returned a value for that as well, too. So we had 3 qualitative assessments, and then our quantitative assessment of tree growth was using increment cores. So we use essentially a little drill you put into the tree, and you pull out a little core. So this is the pith right here, and there's the bark, and we count the annual rings, and we also measured. So with those annual rings, we looked at mean diameter growth rate, we looked at most recent, and what we thought is the establishment period, when that tree was first planted. Okay? All right. So These are the five questions. I'll just walk through what we asked with this data set, and I'll bring them up again, so I'm not going to cover them right now. Okay? All right, so first off, what are RUSI scores look like across all of our cities? So we had something close to a normal distribution, but heavily skewed towards the high end. So that's important to consider in our modifications. We would like this thing to be distributed between 0 and 100, so we think we have some work on our scoring functions to get that distribution more towards that. Average RUSI time was 9 minutes. Okay, that's pretty good for a practitioner to be able to spend amount of time assessing a site. Okay, and if that number goes down with more practice. Okay, so Luke did a bunch of this, and your time was about closer to 10, 11 minutes, right?
Yeah, okay.
All right, so first question, does RUSI correlate with tree attributes? Okay, and I just picked, for the diameter growth rate, I only picked one of them. They all told us the same thing. First, our three qualitative assessments, tree condition, index, and urban tree health. Okay, we had significant relationships, and R squares ranging from 0.18 to 0.4. Okay, so we are getting maximum a third of the variation, which is okay. And we didn't get anything on diameter growth. So the RUSI model, if it does predict something, it predicts health, not growth. Okay, and we're trying to figure out why on that. But before we figure, I mean, as well as we're figuring out why, if I had to predict one of them, I would certainly want to know more about the health and the growth. Because it's not always a good thing to be pushing a lot of growth in urban trees. We want the urban trees to be healthy. Okay, we think that this is mostly related to more nutrient things. So we're including some of the more nutrient assessments in our next steps in our model, which I'll mention in a bit. Okay, so it does not correlate with growth, but it does give us something close to health. All right, how does it perform across species and cities? Okay, so we took that same data set and then split it up by our different species, and we did see some differences in species, all significant, but tended to be better with Tilia cordata, little leaf linden, and we had our lowest with Quercus rubra. And that could be related to number of trees sampled, or we think it might be related to differences in hardiness. So more hardy trees are probably going to be less responsive to differences in site qualities. Okay, so that's something we're going to explore further. Cities, so here again we had significant relationships in all of our five main cities that I did the work in, and you see that something like Springfield, our R-squared was only 0.11 versus Boston, Toledo, and Cleveland, we had relatively high R-squareds. And I think what's going on there, in those cities, we had a wide diversity of planting sites, and we also had generally lower quality planting sites there. Versus Springfield, Massachusetts, that's a really nice area, and many of the sites were being characterized on the high end on the RUSI. Okay, so we think it does a reasonable job against across species and cities, and we think that some of the differences might be explainable. So should we include additional analyses? So at the same time, we also collected soils to see if we should be modifying our model, okay? And the analyses that we ran with those soils were pH, electroconductivity, PN, CCN, organic matter, particular organic matter, wet area stability, laboratory method, and microbial biomass. And then we asked if those properties alone were better indicators of tree health and growth. And that's a model that we created with all of those. The best properties in that, I mean, the model, the properties in that model ended up being phosphorus, carbon nitrogen ratio, and wet aggregate stability. And then when we compare that soil only model to the RUSI, it looks like that we explain more of our variation with the RUSI compared to that. Okay, so RUSI tended to be better than the laboratory analyses alone, but then you probably would ask, what if we added those laboratory analyses to RUSI? Did we get improvement? Okay, and we do. So our R-squared jumped from 0.4 to 0.44. So, but that 0.44, that 4% additional explanation and variance comes at a really significant cost and laboratory. So that would have to be assessed. My feeling is that it doesn't provide enough bang for the buck. Okay? So I think minimal improvements with the stuff that we added to the model to correlate with, to predict with the tree properties. All right. Are the field assessments accurate? Okay. They're pretty decent except for wet aggregate stability. So this is correlations between field and lab, and we don't have a relationship for wet aggregate stability, so we need some work there, and we're working on that. Okay? And how does it perform with other users? So it doesn't perform well, in a nutshell. Okay, so this is David Carter's data compared to mine. And the big difference is in David's and my data is David did not do texture, nor did he do structure because he was not comfortable doing it. And he also only had a one-hour training session. That was intentional. I trained him for 1 hour to see if a minimally trained person could do this model. So the take-home for that, and we found this in the Stevens Point stuff, is that we need a minimum of 6 hours, and you cannot draw properties like texture and structure. Okay? That was one of the things we were hoping with a modular type model. If you don't know how to do it, you could drop it out, but I don't think that's the case, especially something like texture. Okay? So we think we're pretty good in some of these categories, although we're deficient in sensitive management and relating biological relevance. We published this recently, if you're interested. And next steps for the model are to test it in response to management, which Luke is doing, my graduate student. And then we're also exploring better biological indicators, which Joel Gebert, my undergrad student, he's got a poster. If you're interested, come take a look at it this afternoon. It's also available for public release. Send me an email. I'll send you the model. And thanks to those folks. And I went really, really fast.